Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. I can't believe it's been over a year since I've had my guest on the show. Over a year ago, my very good friend Lori Reamer had called me up and said, you have to have Steve Postel on the show. And he came on with Danny Korchmar, and it was a blast. It was a lot of fun and some great guitar work. And I am so happy to have you back.
It's great to be here.
Overdue, but I'm glad you're back. We got some really special things that are happening here. I have several clips of some great guitar playing and some great songwriting. And also, we have a little sneak peek on a new album.
Yep, getting ready to mix. But I did some. I just threw some stuff down to bring over
some roughs. But the can you give us the name? Do we know what the name of it is yet, or you haven't decided?
I have.
Okay.
The name of the album is called "Walking Through These Blues."
Walking Through These Blues.
Oh, I should have brought that song. Oh well.
Next time.
Or I'll play it.
You play it, yeah.
So we're going to take a listen to some of the pre-mixes, some of the early. And then, of course, we'll have you back when the album's done, and then we can compare and see what happens. So, but I'm going to open up with a clip from one of his previous album, and if I'm correct, it's "Time Still Knocking."
Yeah, that was on Emergent Records.
Emergent Records, and this one is called 3:45 coming through, and I got it right. Earlier, I kept saying, I don't know why.
Don't say it.
Don't say it. I won't say it. But anyway, I cut through a couple of pieces. It opens up with a dobro lead, and there's just this really huge lead, layered guitars. This is a good-sized clip, but I wanted to show how he places all the guitars in the song, because there's a lot of little cool things that are going on behind the vocals and stuff. So even though this is an edit, the song is a longer song. I just cut pieces of it, but you get an idea of what's going on. So anyway, let me play 3:45 coming through, and then we'll talk more about it. Thank you.
lamps are low all down my street. Moon in the cracks, boots on my feet. I walk to Maine, close to the wall. Jim is closing down, EL's last call. 3:45 coming through. I got to stop thinking about you. Got to stop. Guitar. Take a breath, 2 years go by, everything changes.
That's some great guitar playing.
Well, I have to, right off the bat, say that that guitar solo is actually my favorite guitar player in the world. I wish it was me. That's Robin Ford.
Robin Ford.
Okay. And so that's
the main lead that came
the
in.
The main lead, the original, the Dobro's Me. So that was the way that song just came together, there were a lot of, it was quite a band on that record. That's so just the band, the rhythm section is Steve Ferroni from the Heartbreakers on drums, Leland Sklar on bass, Ben Montench and Peter Adams on keyboards. So it was pretty amazing right off the bat. And then, so I laid down the Dobro, and both Robin Ford and Buzzy Featon played on that song.
Okay, so when you're singing at the beginning and all those little fills,
yeah,
which one is that?
Well, it's a combination. Some of it, Robin was answering me.
Okay.
The Les Paul sounding guitar, and the Strat was Buzzy, and the Dobro was me.
Oh, okay. Some great stuff. It's just amazing how they play around your voice. I mean, it's just all of that together. It's some really cool stuff.
Well, I actually play that when I teach to show. Robin is as much as he's got a great career and he's respected, he's still underrated. His knowledge of harmony and melody is unsurpassed. That take of his is one take from the first note through the solo to the last note of the tune.
Wow.
Once he understood the tune, had heard it a few times, saw where the vocal went, I did an app for the iPad, which unfortunately is no longer, the company doesn't exist anymore, but I produced these lessons. And we had beautiful stuff. We had Jackson Browne and Richard Thompson and so on, and Eric Johnson. And Robin and Roscoe Beck did one. And one of the owners of the company, who loved music but is not a musician, he said, he made some joke about, well, play all your good licks. And Robin said, I don't play licks. It's all melody.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from knowing him over the years and listening to his playing.
No, I had heard him play. There was a tribute on, it's been out, I think it's on video, for Les Paul, and he was playing.
Mm.
And he's just brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, just, well, I mean, I've followed him for years, but he's just amazing. But the tone, now, can you tell me, he was using a Les Paul?
That was a, let me think. Let me get back in my head to that session. I know what the amp was.
What was the amp?
That was a cranked up Fender Twin.
A Twin.
Turned up loud. No pedals, one mm-hmm. cable. Yeah, that was a Les Paul.
And what was Buzzy using?
Buzzy was playing a Strat that day, and that was going through a Super.
Super Reverb.
Mm-hmm.
Fenders. It's got that sound. I'm just, it's just amazing. That's great. And the dobro. What kind of dobro?
That could have been a number of them. I'd have to look at my notes. I have a few, and I had borrowed some for that record. I had a lot of guitars on that record. That was a wooden dobro as opposed to a Nashville that's all metal.
Mm-hmm. And did you mic it close, or where did you pull it back?
Two mics. Yeah. So I have one right here, and that sort of getting the resonator.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have one about 2 feet away, because there's so much nice slide noise. You don't want to get the slide hitting the strings, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to play another clip. I don't remember. Wait until you get here.
Mm-hmm.
Which album was that from?
Originally, that was on two different records, because there was one that was... I had a band that toured for about 10 years called mm-hmm. Little Blue, and it was from that record. And then... when I got to L.A., I took all the records I've made and did a compilation called Until You Get Here. So it's on both those records. And Wait Until You Get Here, another amazing guest, I'm playing the acoustic, I'm playing one of the electrics, and the solo is Eric Johnson.
Okay.
Unmistakable, his tone.
So you're going to hear some finger picking in the opening, but there's a thing, there's like a bridge. I cut to the bridge and you're finger picking,
mm-hmm.
and there's somebody doing like muted harmonics. Is that Eric? And, you know, and I'm going to play the clip in a minute.
I'll have to hear it because I did some of them.
And then there's the big lead, and that's Eric in the lead. Yeah. All right, let me play the clip and take a listen, because this is a very interesting arrangement, even though I'm abbreviating it. Again, these songs, this clip is a long clip. And this show was interesting. I was talking with Steve before the show. It was very difficult to edit because there was all these cool things happening. So this is probably the first show I've done such long clips, but the songs are actually longer. But take a listen. It starts out with the finger picking. You'll see what I'm talking about, and then we'll break it down.
There's a lot of subtle stuff in these tracks. Like David Grissom is playing a very subtle baritone part on this tune that you can't really hear that clearly, but if you take it away, it loses some of the... So I layer all this stuff in the studio.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers in there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, take a listen. This is Wait Until You Get Here.
Saint or seer, I met an old man in Gramercy Park. He was playing chess with a friend. 2,000 years worth of memories.
There's a lot of stuff going on in there.
Well, I'm playing acoustic, I'm playing one electric part, and I just hearing it, Jeff Pivar, amazing guitar, he's playing there's certain swells. I kind of put it together like a painting, and I have different people play, and then I piece it together and orchestrate it. So Jeff played some beautiful stuff.
He did all the volume pedal type
stuff. Well, some of it, and then some of it
was you?
Some of it was me, and some of it was Jeff. And then Eric did the solo, and Eric was, those harmonics you were talking about was Eric.
Those little muted things was Eric. And then, so what were you using and what was Jeff using? Let's just break it down a little bit here.
I remember that I played, the acoustic is a Martin Herringbone D28. I remember that.
Okay.
The electric I played, which was sort of, I was playing almost not power chords, but beefing up the chord changes with it, when that was an old 335, a 69 tobacco 335 I have. Jeff was playing a 59, 58 white Strat that he's now been playing mostly Tellys, but that was his main guitar back then. He would have been using, and we were recording with a Vibroverb, Fender Vibroverb. Yeah, both he and I used that. Eric sent me his stuff. So Eric, what he does, because he was in Texas, so I sent him the tracks. Roscoe Beck produced that record, and they played together for years. So Eric, he records it, and then he sends a two track with all of his Eric Johnson effects. But he also sends all the tracks, the reverb separately, the delay, so the clean guitar. And I ended up using it's Eric Johnson. I'm not going to mess with how he...
Yeah. No, it sounded like he was using the fuzz face that had that type of distortion to it.
Yeah, I think so.
He was using that.
Yeah.
But it sounded good. But there was also more. You used how many acoustic guitars? There was...
I doubled. I used I know that I played the... there's certain sections where I wanted it to be doubled, and I used it. And I used a Guild D40, also late '60s, but the primary part that I played all the way through was the Martin.
Okay, because they do get, there's some counterpoint there. It's not just doubling.
No, it's not just doubling. It comes particularly in, there's some stuff in the bridge. Yeah.
So in your approach, I keep hitting my wind filter here. I'm Italian. I use my hands. Anyway, so the thing is that what I wanted to ask you was, you were talking about colors. How did you approach that in the song? I want to go a little more into that.
Sure.
How you arrange, because it's really...
Well, a lot of the stuff, to me, that in terms of pure songwriting, you should be able to sit down on a piano or guitar and play the song, and it should hold up. And so like a song like that, I can sit on acoustic guitar solo and play the song. So my idea as a producer, and this one was with Roscoe, who co-produced it with me, who's a brilliant producer. He did Famous Blue Raincoat, which is one of the greatest produced records, I think, of all time. So we start with that as a fundamental, and then it's like painting. It's like everything that goes on has to be something. Now, these particular tunes happen to be pretty dense, but I don't think it takes away you can overdo it. It's not just to slap stuff on. Everything has a purpose of bringing out... I was classically trained and learned orchestration, and I always, even at the school, I heard, would hear Beethoven as a rock band. I hear the drummer and the bass player and the... So I try to envision it as this orchestration. And the littlest thing, there's little parts where Jeff would play a swell, and I put another one under it, and you can't really, I can hear it because I remember, but it's not something, if I took it away, a little moment.
Yeah, when you take it out, you notice it. Yeah. It's that subtle.
Yeah.
I want to mention one thing. Check out the show. You can go on our archives. It's the one from 5/9/2016. That was the previous show that we had done with you and Danny. Mm. And we go into detail about your background and stuff and where you and you're studying and you did fantastic. But take a look at it and to get more on that. But the on this one, when you were doing the acoustic guitars, the Herringbone and the Guild, again, were you using two mics or just one mic?
Two mics. I don't always. Sometimes three. I just played on a few months ago. Well, it's been about 4 or 5 months on David Crosby's new record,
mm-hmm.
and his guy had three mics on my guitar. He had some very intricate miking technique, which I have not been able to reproduce. You know, I'm always experimenting. The traditional thing on acoustic guitar is two mics. So you have one that's somewhere around the sound hole, and one that's somewhere between the 7th and 12th fret. Mm-hmm. up here, and that's generally more pencil mic, both condensers and a bigger diaphragm mic down here. I'm just always trying to put a different mic, sometimes one mic, and it's the right sound, and I don't have any rules. I'm always kind of riffing in the studio.
Well, when you're using two mics and you're doubling it, you're using two guitar parts, how do you pan them? How do you put the...
Well, I keep the two mics. I don't like to... The two mics that are on one guitar, I think of that still as one guitar. I don't pan them separately.
Okay, so wherever you move it, they're both together.
That's my... Some people do. It sounds funny to me because it's really one guitar. So I keep those mics, if anything, slightly, a tiny bit panned because that recreates what happened in the room. But not... And no big pan on that.
Okay, but you might open it up a little bit.
Like six percent on
each side. Because it does, when you pull it out a little bit, it does get bigger.
I should say that I open it up so that it's kind of mimicking that there was a mic a foot apart. So I open up it, but very little. I still see it as one instrument.
Because the one thing I did notice, too, in this piece that we just played... is the stereo perspective of where you have the stuff, where things pop out. They pop out like over on the left, over on the right. You hear things come in and out, which makes it always... to me, when you play a song over and over and over again, you listen to it multiple times, each time you hear something new coming out of it.
Well, that's the whole... if you use the studio like another instrument, mm-hmm. you have volume, you have panning, you have EQ, compression. There's actually not that many different... So where things are placed, how loud they are, how you EQ them, whether they're compressed, and when you play with all that and it works and you make it all work together, that's how you create a full spectrum of sound as opposed to... I mean, they make great records mono, so you can do that too.
Yeah, and it's amazing. Some of the original mixes, if you hear it on a good system, those mono...
Incredible.
Sound almost three-dimensional.
They really
pop out at you. But you were talking about getting that big sound. When those drums come in, that is huge, but it's not overpowering. It's just like full.
And there's so many parts of that record was a really labor of love, and everybody was, I'd wanted to work with Roscoe for many years, and we got to, and then Eric Amble mixed it, and I specifically picked him for the way he hears guitar. He's a great guitar, but he was in the original Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, and now he's most tours and produces and mixes. That's Steve Holly on drums, who's in Wings and with Elton John, the Kinks, wonderful British drummer. It's got to feel big, but if it's too big, then it's going to overpower something else. It's a really tricky... tricky thing to do.
Now, where did you have Grissom come in? Did he come in on the choruses?
Just the choruses.
That's part of that.
We sent him, between Roscoe and I, we work with a lot of great people, and we were sending stuff around. And he said, I'd love to see what David would do on this. And he sent him kind of more earlier on, before some of the guitars. I assumed he would put a bunch of guitar stuff. He heard the record, and he's another beautiful... I don't know if you know his work. He's an incredible guitar player. And when I say that, because the tone and the parts, And he went, this record needs baritone guitar. And he didn't play any guitar on the record. I think he played one solo, but he did. But he found little spots, mostly in choruses, doubled or harmonized the bass. And the way we were able to mix it in, I don't think you can actually detect it.
So he's doubling the bass line. He's not arpeggiating
no,
or playing.
No, it's mostly so single
double,
line.
Double line.
And it brings a lot of power into the pre-chorus.
And there's piano in there too, right?
Yep.
Okay, so yeah, the piano with the baritone mm-hmm. gives you that. Mm-hmm. There's a resonance that you're, and it works. I mean, whatever you did in the mix between those instruments, it gives it like an extra.
Well, one resonance. Of the, you know, mixing of all the things that people do, I think literally I would say, I mean, obviously playing an instrument well is hard, but mixing is the thing that I think took me the longest, took me 30 years, you know, of sitting next to great guys and listening to what they're doing and bugging them and asking questions, but one of the things when you actually mix is that if you take, like, say, the piano and the baritone, that's a good example.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're probably frequency-wise really competing. So you have to make choices. Whereas if you soloed it, the piano might not sound so good anymore soloed. But you took out a frequency. You said that frequency. Let's let the baritone take that. Let's carve that out of the piano. Let's have the guitar frequency, you know, so it's a beautiful art form.
Yeah, well, you're talking about orchestrating. When you mix, that's your conducting.
Yeah, it is, exactly.
You're conducting
exactly right.
at that point.
Exactly right, except you have control not only of level, but of the equalization and how compressed things are.
You have that distance, you know, movement.
Reverbs, delays. Yeah. I mean, it's really quite. Especially now, I have to say, with the tools that are available digitally, which have gotten so good, it's really playground. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get me out of the studio.
Yeah. Well, the that baritone, whatever you did, it just blends with the piano and all of it just beautifully. I mean, it really does complement each other. But speaking of new stuff, now let's take a listen. I have a couple of clips that you were kind of to bring us from the upcoming album.
Now, understand, I ran these last night. These are not mixes. This is board. This is what
right.
Came
they're
out.
Roughs, but they're pretty cool for roughs.
Okay.
So,
right.
I'm going to go ahead and play. The first one I'm going to play is called, if I'm correct, it's Buried Stone.
Buried Stone. Yeah.
Buried Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And this is interesting. There's, and I want everybody to listen to it. The opening, the guitar, it has the vibrato or the tremolo mm-hmm. on the amp.
That's actually the same amp 15 years later. That's the same vibraverb that we used on,
And then listen to the little fills and stuff. And then there is a lead that I pulled out of it. But listen to the fills that he's doing, because they're just—it's tasty and the tone. And we're going to talk about that. So we'll let everybody hear it first, and then we'll start talking about what you did on it. Here we go. This is Buried Stone.
Thank you.
10 years ago I took a vow, said a prayer to a sacred cow.
Now you can hear in there, okay, that vibraphone, the vibraphone just sounds amazing.
Yeah, they're great.
It's a great song.
They break up in a really nice way. I mean, there's a pedal on there too, but
what were you using? Which pedal?
See, I should take notes on this. I have so many pedals and so many guitars. I was trying to remember what guitar that was. I know what guitar I played. I played a resonator on that solo. I remember that.
That's a resonator?
Yeah. I do not remember what guitar I played on that.
Was it an overdrive that
maybe? Maybe it was the resonator on the rhythm part. That I think that's a resonator. And the solo was, I think, back on that 335. I think so.
Okay, on their rhythm. Now, what was interesting, and again, that was a tricky edit. There's a little bit of an abrupt edit, and I apologize.
That's not how the song goes.
No, I mean, I had to get into the other to go into the lead. But you heard what he was doing, and that's all you.
That's all, yeah.
And he's doing all the fills, which is good because you have such great players on, but you can hold your own.
Yeah, this record, the new record, I'm playing mostly guitar. I love the guitar. I'm such a fan of guitar, and I've in the past had often ended up with a lot of other great guys playing, mm-hmm. and which I love. On this record, I just wanted to be a little more intimate, a little bit. It's been more me. Mm-hmm. I have a few great guests, but I'm playing mostly guitar.
Now, are you playing there's a electric piano in there. Is that a Wurlitzer?
That's a real Wurlitzer, yeah.
Peter
Adams, yeah, he brought
it. So he was playing, and you guys, because you're doing these little fills, and then you go in, and then you'll comp a chord, and it blends right in with the Wurlitzer.
What I like to do, if I can, and I did, I'm doing it on the new record, is I like to cut a basic track with usually four guys, mm-hmm. drums, bass, guitar, keys. So that is basically me, Peter Adams, Stevie DeStanslo, great drummer, plays with Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and many other folks, and Leland Sklar. So the four of us played, and that's essentially the track, the rhythm track, as we played it. So I went back in, just did some other takes, so there are some comps on my part. But a lot of that is what I played off of Peter, the keyboard player, and everybody in the, because then you get a real, the interplay is real organic, and then I add on top of that.
Well, what's happening with the Wurlitzer, he's not playing a lot, but it's important.
He's one of the best.
It's really important. And then were you singing live? Was that a?
That's an overdub.
That's an overdub.
Yeah.
But he, because the it fits. I mean, he's complimenting what you're doing.
I sang.
You did a scratch on it because what he's doing is fit. It fits.
Sure.
It's just 100% taste. And then what you do with the guitar just embellishes it more.
Yeah. Well, Peter and I have been playing together since 1996. He was in the band Little Blue, and we worked together a lot. He'll mm-hmm. be playing. He's co-producing the new record.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I can pick your brain, what are you hearing now in getting to the next step? Are you going to put more on it, or is it going to be a simpler arrangement like that? Because it's nice the way it is.
Yeah, no, I'm not doing the for this record that I'm. I heard a record about 2 years ago came out, a John Hiatt record, and I've just always loved that. You know, he always has this killer four guys, maybe five, and they play, and it's. That's kind of, and I just love the way those records sound, and so there's nothing on this record that has the density of some of the past records. It's much more organic, five mm-hmm. guys maybe, and then some. Of course, there's some overdubs,
mm-hmm.
but so that won't have. That's almost what's on. I think there's some percussion and some background vocals, but not much.
So just a little bit more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now on the mic. Miking your guitar, the electric guitar, because that's all electric guitar there. Do you pull the mics back? Do you let the amps breathe more, or do you tight? You mic tight. And what do you use?
Often two mics.
Two mics.
Sometimes, so that one is pretty tight, 6 inches from the speaker at an angle, coming in at an angle, and then a bigger condenser mic. I move it around the room, see, depending on the sound you want. Sometimes I don't use it if you want a real tight sound. And I've also been splitting the signal and recording a direct signal,
mm-hmm.
so that I can mess around with that, reamp it, or use some effects on it. So I have a lot of flexibility.
Now, but that cut that we were playing, those are just the amp.
Yeah. No, that's just it.
Because it's just the way that Vibrabird, it just has that, what I call bloom. It's just a little bit of dirt to it.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
It's got that.
Yeah, sound. If you hit with, and they're very, the older Fender amps were very responsive to how hard you played. So as you can hear, when I dig in and go, you know, and I go, when you dig in, the amp overdrives the tubes, and you can hear.
Yeah, it just breaks up just, but it's just a little bit. It's hard to describe it, but it has that. It's rich in lower overtones. It gets a real bluesy sound.
That's all.
Now I'm going to play another clip and you can set this one up. Bad Weather,
also from the new record. This is. This has a guest on it. The Dobro is Tony Furtado. And is there banjo on this? He might have played...
Yes.
Yes, so Tony Furtado, if you don't know Tony, he is a monster. Brilliant. People put him in bluegrass, but he's not. He's a master bluegrass-y, bluesy Dobro and banjo player. And he was coming through town. We've done some shows.
So he's doing both the banjo and
the dobro.
Because the banjo's doing little lines behind you. Mm-hmm. But it's very subtle.
Yeah. So that's the dobro's Tony Furtado.
Okay. And then you're playing everything else in terms of...
All the other guitars, yeah.
All the other guitars.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is also from that same... This is still Leland Sklar on bass.
The same rhythm section.
It might be a different drummer. This might be.
Well, let me play it. Yeah. Let me play it. You'll
I'll remember.
You'll remember from here. This is Bad Weather.
Bad weather. if I don't wake up.
Now,
so good.
This is going to be I'm looking forward to this album. It's some really cool stuff.
It's great stuff.
Now, all the slide stuff's the dobro, right?
That's right. That's Tony.
And was that a metal one? Because it was hard for me to tell sometimes when it was your acoustic guitar.
His metal one, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then there's...
acoustic guitar is the Rock Bridge. It's beautiful. That's my newest acoustic. It's handmade in Virginia. That's what Dave Matthews plays. And
that was the one you brought last time, right?
I think I did.
Yes, the Rock Bridge.
Incredible guitar. So that was the acoustic. And then he played whatever he had with him. It was all metal.
So it was just you and the dobro? Because it sounded like there was two guitars. Two acoustics.
I probably did. You know, I'd have to go back to the track.
Would you have doubled with both Rock Bridges, or would you have used
the Martin? No, I would always play a different guitar if I doubled.
But you would double.
Yeah. And then on the... and I wanted a... his solo was just cool, but when it... because it's bad weather, I wanted to just get this really, nasty tone, and I have this pedal. It's a... has a funny name. It's a handmade, just crazy overdrive. Not even overdrive. It's like... No, it's a small little silver thing. And
a Klon? Klon Centaur?
No, you wouldn't know it. I think it was a guy who made handmade pedals years ago. They never were... But it has this...
Great distortion.
Yeah.
So that was the pedal. That wasn't the amp. Was that the Verb?
No, that was a Hot Rod Deluxe with this pedal that had some... funny name, but it's...
So it's the pedal that's really... you're not really pushing the amp.
That's this pedal.
And which guitar?
That is... that's a Les Paul.
That's the Les Paul. Okay. Yeah. That's a great lead. No, that one really worked. That was just some great stuff here. I mean, and it's good to hear you playing. I know you have... I love hearing all the different players that you have on your albums, but it's kind of neat to hear you to do all of that. That's just it's a great sound. That Rock Bridge too is a really beautiful guitar. The how do you approach from playing live, doing some of the this stuff, being more of a quartet? I can understand it's a little more cut and dry what you have to do, but when you're doing some of the other stuff, how do you approach doing that live? Because you got to... obviously you don't have you don't have all the instruments.
Well, it's how you, we have guitar players, keyboard players have their sound palette, and I travel with a pedal board with the different sounds and different pickups, and you're just trying to get the power of the sections, so if there's less guys, you have more to... I mean, the idea is, right now, we were just talking about before, Jackson Brown sometimes, right now he's out with the whole band, but right before it was just him and Greg Lease. And it's the same songs. So
so it goes back to the song. The song has to be able to be played.
Yeah, it's the same song. And if there's, I love playing with two guitar players. So if it's a great guitar player and we find our parts, but if it's not, then you're kicking in probably more different tonality in the chorus than you will if there's two guys.
Mm-hmm.
Or three, in your case.
That's right, we're having three coming up.
The last time, too.
Now, I want to play one more clip, and then I want to go real quick because we're running out of time. I want to play this other clip because it's a totally different thing that you did. It's called the Section C S.
Shadows and Light is the
Shadows
name
and Light. Is that what that?
Yeah.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about that, and I'll play the clip.
I was commissioned to write a ballet, and it's five movements, I think, five or six movements, and. And it was the orchestration was classical guitar, cello, and violin. And I couldn't tell you which part of the
You're playing the classical?
Yes.
And do you remember what you were using?
Yes, I do. It was a Japanese guy, Matsuoka. I don't know who was the apprentice to Kono. That's the guitar I played.
Okay, let me play that clip real quick. Shadows and Light, Section C. And I'm going to play... It's a short clip, so I'm going to play the whole thing.
Here you go. Great.
Very cool.
That was not the that was I played that on a Gurian steel string, made by Gurian.
Oh yeah, that was
Gurian. Okay, because I heard it. Yeah, it did sound a little.
That was steel string.
I wrote it on the classical guitar, and then when I was doing it, I felt that I wanted a little bit more bite, so I played. So I re-recorded it on with a Gurian.
Gurian. Now, we're almost out of time, and I do want to talk a little bit about your upcoming gigs and stuff. But real quick, you brought two guitars in. I think the Jarrell you brought last time.
I might have, yeah.
Okay. But you have a Takamine. Is this the one that you use? Is this your go-to
this
for live?
This is my live. The Rockbridge, we're working with the pickups right now so that I can use that live more. I got this years and years ago when I was touring with John Oates, and I went to meet with these guys. And it's the most, I got to say that if knock on wood, there's some wood. It just always delivers. The neck doesn't move, and
it's got a great sound. It spruce top, and I guess it's rosewood, solid rosewood.
Pickup system is great. It's balanced. It's even each string. So, I have it set up so I can. I like to play acoustic a little bit, so I can solo and electric. And this is a nice. They definitely really thin.
It's a beautiful guitar.
So this is what I travel with and plug in when I'm playing. Mm-hmm.
And then you use the Jarrell for all your electric stuff?
No, I've got. I mean, I love it, but I just played at McCabe's, and I played a Blade Telly
you switch around.
Fender Telly and a. I have a lot of guitars.
He airs them out once in a while.
I can relate.
It's kind of a mood thing. I've got a lot of Strats that I play.
Color matching.
Yeah.
Well, we're out of time, and I have a great clip that I'm going to play to take us out. And I need you to set that up, too.
And let's just announce the show.
Yes, Lori's going to... I'll let Lori do that, but I just want to thank Lori for originally introducing me to you and again rescheduling this, putting this second show together. It's great to have you on here, and thank you.
You're
Lori,
welcome.
For doing that.
And timing wise it's just perfect because we've got Steve Postel has kind of this rotating troupe of all-star musicians and singers that perform under the title of the Night Train Music Club, and I've been helping him for many years in many different venues, and now we've been doing it at Bogey's in Westlake Village, and this is about the fourth one, maybe?
Fifth, I think.
Fourth or fifth, and it's going to take place on Sunday, July 9th at 6 o'clock, and it's another all-star lineup.
Hell
Steve, you want to...
Yeah. It's Alfonso Johnson on bass.
Amazing.
Stevie D, one of my favorite drummers, I got him in between.
It was on your album, yeah.
He's right in between tours. Danny Korchmar, myself, and Carl Verheyen on guitar, who's from Supertramp.
And he plays at Bogey's a lot, so people there know
he's a monster, so is Danny.
Peter's on it, too.
Peter Adams on keyboards.
And then we got special guests.
We've got Jules Galley and
John Pratt.
And some special guests.
Some special surprises that we're not announcing.
My sisters. Susan's
yeah. The whole family.
It's going to be a lot of fun. And thank you to Ken Green for just always inviting us to bring these great shows there to Bogey's. It's awesome.
Do we have an idea when Walking Through These Blues is going to be released? Or do you have a projected time?
I want to have it realistically because I'm touring a bunch of summer. But by Labor Day, that record will be mixed, whether I have to... not sleep for the whole month.
It's kind of been a joke because he produces other people, so his stuff always goes to the side.
He's
played with Dan Navarro and
I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there knocking. It's like finish it because
we've all been like that.
It's a great. The tunes are great.
Yeah, well, at least we get to hear them live every time when he plays. So it's been great preview.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's been a great preview.
Cool.
Now
I'm going to leave us. I want to thank you again for coming on, and we have to come. Obviously you're going to have to come back. We have to talk about that. We'll go through the whole album. I'm going to leave us with a piece, and I think this one is from Until You Get Here.
It's on Until You Get Here.
It's called Leo. And can you set it up for us?
One of my many, but one of my real guitar heroes is Leo Kottke.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically my tribute to him.
Okay. And what are you? It's solo acoustic guitar. So what are you using?
This is the Herringbone D28, a 1973 Herringbone D28.
1973 Herringbone. Okay. So we will. Everybody have a great week. This is Leo. It's a beautiful piece. And then this one was just so nice. I'm not cutting it. It's the full piece. So you'll hear that. But it's well worth the listen. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.
And I look forward to having you back on. And Lori, always, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
It makes a difference. You make a difference.
Thank you.
Okay, here is Leo. Everybody have a great week. We'll see you next week.